For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Host Vandy, tip off for that at 6:30. We'll get right into today's juicy topics. The 5 at 5, brought to you as always by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution. And Tyler, you may fire when ready.
Okay, so we've talked about it a little bit. Obviously, you guys talked about it a lot more yesterday, but the national championship game on Monday night, obviously Clemson rolling to a huge victory over Alabama, something that we don't typically see. Another thing we don't typically see, especially against Alabama, is a freshman quarterback play as well as Trevor Lawrence did on Monday night. So, and this is for all positions through the history of college football, who are some of the most impressive true freshman players you've ever seen, and where does Trevor Lawrence rank among them?
Well, I mean, Herschel's the all-time best.
Obviously.
As a running back.
Right.
But, I mean, in terms of the impact and what he's, you know, got going for the next couple of years, I mean, Lawrence is right up there with any QB.
Yeah.
I mean, to just right from the get-go, go out there and win a national title. I mean, Tua, he was a freshman last year.
Yeah.
And came in and rallied Alabama in the second half against Georgia. But
we didn't get to see a full season of him.
No. But it was pretty clear that Dabo made the right call when he ended up
absolutely,
you know, benching Kelly Bryant and took a, was it fourth game of the season?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bryant left and Lawrence stepped right in there. I mean, if you want to go ahead and do a freshman wide receivers, Justin Ross was pretty good.
I was about to say he showed up as well. That's going to be a dangerous combination for the next 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, he reminded me just it looked like an AJ Green clone.
Yeah, that one-handed catch. I still don't know how he caught that.
Yeah, and then he had, it was that same, it was like a couple plays before that he had the first grab along the sideline,
yep,
where he kind of bobbled it a little bit and still got his feet down and,
yep,
and controlled it. But between Ross and Trevor Lawrence and throw in the six catches that Ross had against Notre Dame,
mm-hmm,
you know, because when you went back and looked at his, you know, his game logs during the season, he had a couple games where he had one catch, two catches. There were a few games where he had five in there, maybe against Wake Forest in the middle of the season.
Right.
But, you know, it's not like he was just a force from, I think he ended up with like 40-something catches on the season.
Yeah.
But then you've got, there's a true freshman who's got an entire season to mature and then a whole month to practice and you just prepare for the playoff. And then he's just, it's, you know, he's like the fully operational Death Star at that point, you know, with 12 total catches in both of those games.
Right. I've heard, of course, people flip out on social media whenever, you know, you witness somebody like Trevor Lawrence have that kind of performance, and there's people pushing for the Trevor Lawrence rule to allow true freshmen to enter the NFL draft.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they'd have to talk to the NFL and their Players Association.
Right, a 19-year-old kid getting, you know, brutalized by, you know, a 38-year-old linebacker or something.
Yeah, no, I mean, Lawrence is well on his way to being the number one overall pick of the draft. And I'm not so sure he wouldn't be the top pick of the draft if he did come out now as a 19-year-old, because
right,
he's just got that potential.
He's that good.
But, yeah, I mean, he's 19 years old. He was playing at Cartersville High School a year ago he was getting ready to go to Clemson, yeah, and early enroll.
Thirteen months ago, he was playing in the state championship game for his high school.
Yeah, and now so, like, he's going to be in the NFL next year. Like,
yeah,
that's a big leap, but
right,
I would, he'd probably be the number one pick in the draft because the guy's got, he's 6'6". He's going to have it going on in a couple of years. I mean, certainly like after his sophomore season, he'll be,
yeah,
ready to go then, but Clemson's going to get him for another year. The way things go at Clemson, he might end up playing all 4 years there.
It's true. He did say in after the game, I forget the exact phrasing he put, but implying three more years. Now, I find that highly unlikely, but especially given that he's probably will be the number one pick in the draft in 2 years, but it's what he said on the field was he expects to be there for 3 more years bring home 3 more championships or something to that effect.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. I believe it when I see it. To me, for me, it's just there's the in 2000 and I guess there's 1920, so he would be
2021 draft.
It would be in the April of 2021, so the 2020 NFL season should be a race to the bottom.
Yeah. And, you know, let's see, by that point, Matt Ryan would be 36. I wouldn't mind getting Lawrence in the system, get him to learn for maybe a year or two.
You got to fight me for him because I want him in Miami.
I think you want everybody in Miami.
At this point, I do. That's just a bad – like, if you know – like, there's – all these jobs are getting filled in the NFL now, and, like, there's really nothing out of Miami because, like, that's not an attractive job. They don't have anything to offer.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no capital they've got. Even if you wanted to go in there and, like, say, clean house and, like, trade some guys and bank some draft picks, they have nothing that anybody wants.
You have the strong possibility of beating the Patriots at home every year.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Right. If the game is in, you know, like, November or December, and then New England's used to it being cold, and then they go down there and it's really hot.
You catch the Patriots sleeping every year.
Sure.
That's what you're coming to Miami for.
Yeah. Hey, but it could be the second time, though, they cost the Patriots a trip to the Super Bowl. Because if New England wins that game, they're the one seed right now.
Yep. Isn't it supposed to be snowing when they host the Chargers this weekend?
When I looked at the forecast Monday, yes. When I looked at the forecast yesterday, no. The forecast now is back. It's still partly cloudy, but just really cold. Temperatures in the upper 20s. But Monday, the forecast had wind and snow. But now there's no wind, partly cloudy, clear, but 1 o'clock, 27 degrees, 28 at 2. So it's going to be really cold, but no precipitation.
Okay.
And no wind either, which is, you know, honestly, like the bigger deal.
I think that gives San Diego a little better chance now.
L.A.
Yeah. See? It's a reasonable mistake.
Oh, I know. I'm kidding.
Honestly, they really don't even have a hometown.
No, they don't.
They play in a stadium in L.A., but they're really an L.A. team. Not really.
No. All we need is a Colts win and a Chargers win, and my dream comes true.
Oh, boy.
The Chargers hosting the AFC title game.
Hey, it's not impossible.
Yeah.
The Colts looked good last week.
You know who was another – I'm thinking about true freshmen. Like, Adrian Peterson was pretty good.
Yeah, that's true.
Right from the get-go. Darren McFadden wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
I mean, Herschel was the best.
How did you feel about Leonard Fournette as a freshman? Definitely had the hype coming in.
Yeah, no, Fournette was good. I'll tell you one who was really good. I hated him, though. I ended up hating him, was Maurice Claret.
Yep.
Led the Buckeyes to that natty.
Yep.
As a true freshman. You know, but, I mean, just the... As far as quarterbacks go, I mean, right now it'd be hard to top. I mean, I get we always do, like, the recency bias thing, but... Trevor Lawrence they went 15, and I mean, I guess he didn't start every game.
Yeah,
but
he played enough in all.
He played
those
enough
games.
That he was 15-0, and they beat Alabama by 4 touchdowns to win the national title.
So, are you going to ride with him for the Heisman next year?
I mean, he'd have to be the favorite.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't, you know, which maybe creates some value on Tua.
Yeah, because
Tua's still going to be
chip on the shoulder after losing this year.
Yeah, I know. I mean, Tua's still going to be great. I'm going to look at DeAndre Swift's number still.
True. Doesn't start out the season hurt.
What we saw, I mean, we saw what Swift could do once he was healthy in that last month of the season.
Right. That's definitely going to be interesting.
Yeah.
All three of those teams could be back in the playoff again. All right, moving on.
Well, Clemson will be.
Yeah, no, without a doubt.
Clemson will be, and then the SEC champ will be, so it really only leaves 2 vacancies. But Clemson's in the playoff next year.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't be. All right, moving on the 5-5, we actually kind of already talked about this a little bit earlier, but you asked me the question, so I'll relay it back to you. What are reasonable expectations for the men's basketball team in the SEC play this year?
Well, after losing by 46 points their first time out in SEC play, I'd probably dial it down to, like, if Georgia got 18 conference games, so there's 17 left.
Yeah.
If Georgia got to like 6 or 7 wins in the league, looking at that schedule, because I mean, I think tonight's game is a coin toss.
Right.
If they win it, great. They're 1-1, but they're going to lose at least their next 3.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they don't win tonight, then they're going to be sitting at looking be you're going to be 0-5 within 13 games to play, and then you start, well, are you going to be a 500 team in the SEC now the rest of the way to get to 6 or 7 wins? So
right.
But like tonight's game, win or lose, they're not winning. They're not beating Auburn Saturday. They're not going to beat Kentucky and Florida after that. Then they, you know, LSU seems like a winnable game, but it is in Baton Rouge.
Right.
And so, you know, tonight's game, if you win that, and then you're 1-4 instead of 0-5 with 13 to play. I would say 6 or 7 wins would be maybe topping out.
So we're looking for a lot of moral victories, like you mentioned earlier. Playing a team like Kentucky reasonably close.
Yeah.
Maybe having a chance in the final minutes against an Auburn.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
But like, or not even like maybe against Kentucky or Florida to like, hey, down the stretch, we're kind of in the game. And maybe you can. Maybe Georgia could pull an upset somewhere along the line this season. I mean, I wouldn't completely write that off. Georgia played the best team in the conference Saturday.
Right.
And just got, they ran into a team that apparently appeared determined that they just wanted to make a statement right off the bat in conference play, and Georgia was their victim and paid the price. But that, I mean, I get on the bright side, it's from the good standpoint for Georgia now. It's like if Georgia went to Auburn on Saturday and lost by 16 or 17 points, which is essentially like what you would expect, right?
Yeah.
But that would seem like, hey, that's a lot of progress this team has made in 1 week after losing by 46.
That's 66% improvement.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, maybe when the dust settles, we'll look back and say, like, you know what? That team was, they knew what they were doing by getting blown out by Tennessee, because it just put that bar really low now.
Yeah, everything else looks gold after this.
Yeah.
All right, sticking with basketball, you mentioned who your Final Four are. If you had to pick a Final Four out of nothing but dark horse candidates, who would they be?
All right, I'd start with Nevada.
Nevada.
Nevada would be one. Virginia Tech would be another. Okay. Texas Tech would be one. And then, well, Kentucky now all of a sudden. They're not the best.
As
I'm
a dark
horse. I'm just kidding. Well, okay, Kentucky's like looking up at not one but two teams in their own league now, right?
That is true. That is true.
How about like, because they made a good run last year. I'll throw Florida State in there.
I thought you were going to say Loyola.
Nah. I mean, I can't. It's the Cinderellas are
hard.
Yeah, that's
those are 1 year fantasy type things.
But I mean, Nevada's good. I mean, they would certainly be a dark horse from a mid-major. But I mean, we're talking about the ACC. But when you think about the ACC with Duke and North Carolina, and I mean, I would think Virginia Tech would be one. Like, okay, that'd be off the radar. Texas Tech, I'll go with them. They had a good year last year too. They made the Elite Eight, right?
Yes.
And Florida State made the Elite Eight. So, I mean, is that my cheating? Can I count them dark horses then?
No, I think
they're not traditional.
Right, they're not traditional powers. That's kind of what I was going for.
All right.
I'm sure there's a bracket competition around the office here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Be interesting to see who wins that one.
Usually it's like none of us.
Really?
A couple of years ago, Jeff and I we finished last and next to last.
Wow. Dang.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and you guys were talking about this yesterday. Obviously, Georgia played Tennessee on Saturday. Heard you guys talking about this last night. Tennessee has the player Admiral Schofield.
Sure.
Which is a phenomenal sports name.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of your favorite sports names ever?
Well, another basketball player, World Be Free, was good.
Okay. Does Meta World Peace count, even though he changed his name?
No, if you change, well, I guess World Be Free changed his name too, but... No, I mean, Meta World Peace will always be Ron Artest to me. I'd say a couple, I mean, all-time great name from Georgia's history is Hiawatha Berry.
Hiawatha Berry, yeah, that's a good one.
Is always one you can't beat. But, World Be Free, Admiral Schofield is a good one. Are there those old-timey baseball players always had cool nicknames. Like
Cannonball Titcomb.
Yeah. Mordecai Three-Finger Brown.
Yeah.
Let's
see. Who did this guy play for? This is a former Providence basketball player, God Shemagod.
I remember him.
Shemagod.
Yeah.
Sorry.
He was like, it was not too long ago.
Yeah, he last played in 2009.
I remember like in the, because every year on signing day, you like to go through and look at the, look at names of guys. I remember Michigan signed a guy a couple of years ago. I don't think he ever played or anything, but his name was Mr. Simpson.
Mr. M-I-S-T-E-R?
Yes. His name was Mr. Simpson.
because I've pulled up just a host of great sports names. Coco Crisp.
Oh, Coco Crisp is great.
Milton Bradley,
yeah,
like the board game company.
Yeah, Mr. Simpson played, he played in 06, appeared in four games, had two carries for 11 yards at Michigan.
Here's an interesting one with a bit of a story behind it. DeBrickashaw Ferguson, former New York Jet.
Oh, yeah, that was a good name.
Are you familiar with the Key and Peele show?
Yeah.
You know how they do the East-West All-Star like parody with the weird names?
No, but I know, I'm familiar with the show.
Well, they have a skit on there where it's like an East-West All-Star game, and they have college players with just absolute ridiculous names, Hingle McCringleberry,
sure,
stuff like that. It was inspired by DeBrickashaw Ferguson.
Oh, it was?
Because one of the guys liked to play Madden, and he was like playing the Jets or on the Jets or something, and saw DeBrickashaw Ferguson,
mm-hmm,
and that name spawned those skits.
Oh, it did?
Just because it's a crazy name.
I remember the one where like one of them was a substitute teacher, and there was the kid in the class named like Aaron, but
Aaron, where he mispronounced every name.
Yeah,
they have tons of great skits, but that the East West All Star was inspired purely by DeBrickashaw Ferguson.
Yeah,
you had Chad Ochocinco as well. Now that is a name change.
He did that. Now I did. How about T.J. Hushmanzada? That was
Hushmanzada. That's a good one.
His teammate.
I just had another one right here. Haha, Clinton Dix. Can't forget about him.
Yeah.
Richie Incognito. That's kind of an interesting one.
That's a good
one.
Name, too, yeah.
And as for somebody that plays on the offensive line that doesn't get talked about much.
No, for the fact that he's just like, he's a enormous human being, but his last name is Incognito.
Incognito.
Yeah.
We had Urban Shocker. That's an old-timey baseball player.
Yeah. Like, there's plenty from, like, old-time baseball players. But, I mean, two recent ones that you brought up, Milton Bradley and Coco Crisp,
yeah,
are good.
Let's see, Spud Webb, former Hawk.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good one. Captain Munnerlyn.
Yeah, he was at South Carolina.
Yeah, he's still bouncing around the NFL somewhere. I forget where he's at now.
Yeah.
Yeah, tons of great sports names over the years. All right, closing out the 5 at 5 with, obviously, we've been talking about coordinators and stuff with what happened with Jim Chaney and everything. A lot of coordinators bouncing around the NFL as well. Can you name, on offense and defense, the longest tenured coordinators in the NFL right now? And take a wild guess.
For an offense and a defense.
Yeah. So starting with offense.
Well, it's not anyone on the Patriots, because McDaniels was, or could it be Josh McDaniels as the OC at New England? It's obvious it's not the Falcons, guys.
It's not the Falcons.
The Saints have turned over their defensive coordinator a couple of times. I don't even know who the Saints OC is. Is it Sean Payton?
Actually, no. The winner, the longest tenured OC in the NFL is actually from the Saints, Pete Carmichael Jr.
Okay.
He's been at the helm since 2009.
All right, so
that's a guy that never gets talked about,
ever.
So I
get partial credit for
that.
All right, because I came up with the team. I didn't know who it was.
Because I didn't know until I looked it up, because I just assumed it was Sean Payton.
So the Saints offensive coordinator is the longest tenured OC?
Yes. Now let's go DC.
The longest tenured defensive coordinator.
It's not long, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, I mean, it can't be. It probably would have been Matt Patricia before he left for Detroit last year, right?
It would have been.
So,
no offensive coordinator, or no defensive coordinator in the NFL right now was coaching before 2010.
The Steelers.
No.
It's not the Steelers?
It's not. That's Keith Butler. He's only been at the helm since 2015.
Oh, really?
I'm talking about, like, a lot of these guys have been with the team for a long time. I'm talking about
as the actual
coordinator.
Yes. So Pete Carmichael is the OC, the defensive coordinator. So it's not Pittsburgh's.
It's not Pittsburgh's. It's a playoff team, I'll tell you that much.
It's not Marquon. Is it the Cowboys?
No. You're thinking Rob Marinelli. You're close.
Marinelli would be.
He's 1 year off from being the longest tenured.
Well, it can't be the Rams. It's not the Eagles. Or is it the Eagles now?
It's not the Eagles.
Because they have
AFC. Think AFC.
Is it the? Oh, it's the old guy for the Chiefs.
It is Bob Sutton.
Bob, yeah.
He's been at the position since 2013.
Okay.
He was the Jets' assistant head coach before that.
All right. So,
a lot of turnover in the NFL.
All right. Well, I score at least. I get a half a point for
you were close,
getting this coming up with the Saints.
I didn't know the Saints either. I assumed it was Sean Payton, because you would talk. You know, most of the time, OCs and DCs get talked about, get shown on the air. This Carmichael guy never gets mentioned.
Well, I mean, Peyton calls the plays, though.
Right.
I mean, he's the one. He's got the big laminated thing,
right.
And he's, you know, he always has it over his mouth,
right.
So you can't read his lips.
But they list an offensive coordinator.
Yeah, everyone's going to have one, but.
Well, I mean, Dan Quinn's going to be calling plays for the Falcons next year.
Right.
I don't know if they're necessarily going to have a listed defensive coordinator.
Probably have a DC, though, right? I don't know.
We'll see.
Maybe you will, maybe you won't. By the way, so we're talking about uninspired hire. Just bringing back Dirk Cutter.
The only thing I'll say about that is at least Matt Ryan's familiar with him. It's not a totally new guy. So there's that aspect.
Sure. I mean, because that is something the Falcons have dealt with now between
yeah.
Shanahan leaving, and then you bring in Sarkisian, and then before Shanahan you did have Cutter. So there was, I mean, since 2014 with Cutter.
We had Malarkey before that.
Malarkey.
No, you did have Cutter. Okay, Malarkey was before Cutter, sorry.
Yeah,
Cutter
by the way, they brought Malarkey back,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Cutter was, he ended when Mike Smith was gone.
Yeah, Cutter, Shanahan.
Yeah.
And then Sark.
Yeah.
So that's three since 2014.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I will say that at least it's somebody Matt Ryan's familiar with.
Right. And the Falcons have the pieces on offense where they're going to,
yeah.
Somebody's going to call plays and Atlanta's going to be productive. But it's going to come down to those moments of like, well, in the red zone. And,
right.
You know, what are you
calling the correct play?
Right.
Which that's where a lot of offensive coordinators get their flack from. They can average 40 points a game, but when you don't make those right calls in the red zone.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, that was Chaney's deal. Like the goal line stands that Florida was making, the second halves where we just shut it down against Alabama. And I get it. I mean, those are all things that were open for criticism there. But that's, but the, you know, the point is, like, you didn't like Jim Chaney. Whoever Georgia gets to be the new offensive coordinator, and it's probably going to be James Coley. The second we go three and out next year,
yeah,
get
the pitchforks.
Yeah, the second that he calls a play that doesn't work, the fans will hate him too, just like
yeah.
there were fans that didn't like Mike Bobo. That's the nature of that offensive coordinator business.
You're not a fan if you don't hate your offensive coordinator.
Yeah, but anyway, I mean, I Jim Chaney was a good coach, and that certainly is a coup for Tennessee. But he could be replaced. I mean, I don't think Jim Chaney is that good that he's highest paid offensive coordinator in the country good, which is what Tennessee made him.
Well, now another offense coordinator is just going to use that as leverage.
Yeah.
Like, I'm better than this guy.
Right.
Give me the money.
Well, I mean, Georgia's in all likelihood, Georgia's going to be spending the money, but
right.
it's just going to go into Sam Pittman's pocket now.
Yeah.
And rightfully so. I mean, that's the guy Georgia can't let.
Yes, sir.
They can't let him get away. All right. 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.